Today is November 24th, 2019. This is Mobley's podcast number 308. I'm Todd Agassor, and I've got an echo here. And I'm with my good friend John Westfall. We'll figure this out later.
So I mean, the exciting thing is that you have a real good reason for having an echo in your ear because you have a new toy.
I have a new toy. I bought a MacBook Pro for a couple of dumb reasons. One, the last Mac I bought for myself was the 2010 MacBook Air. So it's actually been a while since I bought a Mac for myself. I've been using my daughter's hand-me-downs since then. I had her 2011 MacBook Pro. And then when she graduated from high school, I got that one. And when she graduated from college, I got her 2013 MacBook Air, and I bought her a new one. And now I finally bought one for myself. It was on sale at Costco. And I figured, you know, if we get the Chinese tax or tariffs take effect in December 2019, then price might go up. So I figured, hey, it's a sale. I've been saving up for it for 9 years. Maybe it was time to pull the purchasing trigger.
So 365 times 9, that's 3285. So less than a dollar a day.
Yeah. Actually less than 50 cents a day, I think.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the problem is I had to reconfigure Audio Hijack, which is what I used to record on this. And I thought I duplicated what I had on the air. I took a screenshot and I duplicated it on here, and I'm still getting an echo, and I don't know why. But it's not bad enough that it's going to cause me to stop recording. I'll just fix it. Main thing is John and I tested it before we started. Had the echo, but I could hear our conversation fine. So here we are recording on a new MacBook for the first time in several years. Excuse me. Anyway, welcome back, John.
Yeah, I was, what was I doing last weekend? Last weekend, I think you had to cancel.
I had to cancel last week.
Before we recorded. Yeah, so it's been a week or two, but I think you've got a new toy, obviously, that you'll talk about. And then I've got a new idea for a project. And so, yeah, we're being very techie, true to what we're, I guess, supposed to be talking about.
Yeah. And in fact, I have another new toy that we'll talk about after your new toy.
Oh, wow.
So, but first, we'll start with the MacBook Pro. So it's the 13-inch MacBook Pro. I almost bought the 13-inch MacBook Air. But the one that Costco had on sale only had 128 gigs of solid-state drive. And I thought, man, that's really a little, little storage. So I thought about it for a couple of weeks, 2 weeks maybe. And in the meantime, another sale popped up for the MacBook Pro at 256 gigabytes, which is still small. The Air I bought for my daughter in 2019 had half a terabyte. So, but you know what? I will learn to live in my restricted environment, my resource-restricted environment. On the other hand, you know, a couple of things I learned, having not bought a new MacBook at all since I guess I bought my daughter's in 2017. She got a MacBook Air. And the newest MacBook I've been using is 2013, so even that's 6 years old. So this one has a fingerprint reader, which I didn't remember reading about, but that's kind of interesting. I really haven't had to use it yet because I have it. Paired with my Apple Watch, so my Apple Watch unlocks it. So that's kind of nice. And the Touch Bar, John, you have a MacBook Pro. Do you have a Touch Bar on yours?
So I have the last MacBook Pro that is. You know, we used to joke about the first good MacBook Air.
Yep, 2010.
But this is the last of the sort of previous style of MacBook Pro. So it's a mid-2015, so it still has all the ports, and it doesn't have the touch bar and all those things. So
it has a good keyboard.
So I'm planning on upgrading next year once the 13-inch is refreshed again. But, I've been very curious about the touch bar because it got so much kind of universal, not despisement, but people just sort of didn't like it.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a cool idea, and I've used software that has emulated the touch bar. So things like Duet Display will show the touch bar and a few other things. And it seems useful. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah. So like you, I kind of dismissed it when I read about it, when it originally came out. It never seemed interesting enough or desirable enough to go out and actually try it or look at it at Apple mm-hmm. Store. So this is the first time I've actually seen it, you know, on my own MacBook. And I'll tell you, I was surprised. I kind of like it. Couple of things. You know, the MacBook Pro with Touch Bar doesn't have an escape key. So escape key is on the Touch Bar. And I'm not sure. I'm trying to think how often I use escape key, and I think the answer is not much. But if that's something you use a lot, there's no physical escape key, which I thought was interesting. And because of that, there's also no function keys on the number row. And getting a little bit of feedback. So the Touch Bar, you know, changes as you. And this is nothing new. When did the Touch Bar come out? 2016, 20.
Around 2016.
So it's been really out a couple of years, but to John and me, it's new. The volume control is much better than using, you know, the other kinds of volume controls. So that's kind of interesting. And I kind of like the way it reconfigures itself. It's kind of neat. Also, the when you're typing, suggested words, you know, next word, predictive typing, actually mm-hmm. shows up in the Touch Bar. So you can tap on the word if it's a word you want to use. Okay.
Well, I think that is it's a good thing, I think, that you have that to play with now, and you can help dispel the hate around it, because it seemed like a useful thing, but man, so many people just didn't like it.
Well, I just thought it was dumb when I first heard about it, but now that I've actually used it, I like it. All right. Now, one thing I kind of like and don't like is the USB-C only ports. So, first thing, it's got two USB-C ports, but they're both on the left side. So, if you want to plug your power in from the right side, you're out of luck. The only thing on the right side is, it's a mini jack for your headset. That's it.
Hmm.
Yeah, nothing else. I'm looking if I'm missing something. Nope, not missing anything. No SD card slot, no USB-A port. No power port, because power is through USB-C. And that's the one nice thing about it. You know, Apple power adapter is expensive. You know, I know my daughter had one that burnt out on her when she was in college and had to be replaced. And that was like, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 bucks. And I've had a couple of frayed cables, which are physically attached to power adapter. So they were kind of... Wait, that's not true. Are they physically attached? Yeah, they are. They're physically attached to the power adapter. So again, you got to replace the whole thing if it's so frayed you can't just tape it up. So it's nice having a USB-C that you can just replace the power adapter. I ordered one from Amazon for, I think, $30. So it should come in one of these days as a spare, just in case. The bad thing, of course, is no USB-A. So to do this podcast, I had to plug in a USB-C hub with two USB-A ports on it just to plug in my microphone. And also, I bought a 250... Well, again, you know, it has a 256-gigabyte solid-state drive. So instead of buying a big honking hard drive to back it up, I bought a USB-C thumb drive that's 256 gigs. And I figure, if I want to keep generations of backups, I can just buy another thumb drive.
Yeah, that was something when I was reading through in the show notes, I thought... I had never really thought of that, but it's crazy that our backup media could now be the size of a, you know, micro SD card. And, you know, I have somewhere over here these little coins that you can buy that you can hide a micro SD card in, have as a novelty thing. And I thought, wow, that is really cool to think that you could back up your entire laptop encrypted on a micro SD card, hide it inside a coin, and, you know, keep it somewhere secure. That's... kind of crazy, but you know, that's technology.
And I have to say, I didn't think about using a SD card, although I should have. But the Anker USB-C hub has, I think it has a SD card reader. Yeah, it has an SD card reader. I think it has a compact flash card reader too. So I could use that. At any rate, I think I paid less than $30 for a 256 gigabyte thumb drive. It's a SanDisk, so it is a brand name. And it took about hour and a half to the initial backup, which was about 27 gigabytes. I assume the Anker's USB-A ports are 3.0. And it's going over USB-C, which is essentially Thunderbolt. So, and the thumb drive is rated for USB 3.0, so it's reasonably fast. And I'm okay with, you know, taking an hour and a half for the initial backup. That's fine.
Well, for something, are you using Time Machine for your backups? Yeah, so for Time Machine, it just stays in there. You can always just leave it in, and it'll do its backup periodically. Exactly. So, you know, that's not a bad sort of... I actually have this little... I'm sure they make these for the newer MacBooks, but I have this little... showing it to Todd right now. It's a micro SD card reader, but it's made to go kind of flush inside the SD card reader on the MacBook.
If you have
they don't have SD. Yeah, they don't have SD card readers on the MacBook anymore, but this company or companies like it, I'm sure, make a version like this that would just fit flush inside one of the USB-C ports or very nearly flush, and you could kind of keep your backup disk in there at all times.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool, I think. So... in any case, the other thing, it's not related to the Pro, but it is new with macOS Catalina. So I am running Catalina on this, which means I can't run Levelator to process our audio anymore. So we'll see how that goes. Worst case is I'll use a Windows machine to run Levelator where it still runs. But I'll try using, what did I buy? Rogue Amoeba's Fission to do the volume leveling for us. And if that sounds really bad, then I will revert back to Levelator on a Windows machine or something. But what I was going to say is you don't need a new MacBook to do this, but macOS Catalina's sidecar, I had to use it last night. So I propped up my iPad Pro right next to the MacBook Pro, and I tapped on sidecar, and it wirelessly connected to my Pro and gave me a second screen. And that's how I built the new audio hijack. Whatever you call this, processing
whatever this
layout.
Thing is.
Yeah. Workflow. That's what it is. The recording workflow, which, as I said, I'm getting echo and I don't know why, but we'll figure it out.
Well, I'm glad that you have one of these, because like I said, my plan is to buy one next year. So I will be able to take advantage of watching you with a modern Mac. And one of the things that I am looking kind of forward to, but not looking forward to, is that when I go to my next MacBook, I will have to get a USB-C hub because right now things are plugged straight in. And my Apple Cinema Display that I use will get a little less useful in that the power that it provides, it's through a MagSafe adapter, so it won't be able to be used anymore. But so it'll be interesting to get a modern Mac to use a monitor that really isn't that old. It's only about 10 years old, but things change in the Mac world.
Yeah, and I should say I have an Anker USB-C hub. I think I only paid $40 for it. They used to be really expensive in the beginning. They were like $80 to $100, but now they're quite affordable. So I'm pretty happy with this USB-C hub. It's also a what do you call those things? PD port, power, is that a PD? Yeah, PD, power delivery USB-C on it. So you can plug the hub itself into a power supply and then plug the hub into the MacBook Pro or Air and plug in all your other stuff so you can reduce your cable count. I'm not using it like that right now, but it's possible. Yeah.
Very cool.
Okay, so, let's see, I thought I had one more thing I wanted to say about this, but it slips the mind and it's not in my show notes. It runs kind of warm. I think it runs warmer than the Air, but, Okay,
so well, it can also then cook something for you if you need, an egg or something like that. You can just, cook right on there. So, you've got your toy. My toy this week, I had an interesting... So Thursday morning, I guess, I was reading through Reddit and a few other places, and I came across a video and then also an article about using a Raspberry Pi 4 as an iPad Pro accessory. Now, this interested me because I did not realize that the Raspberry Pi 4 can do Ethernet over USB-C with the latest firmware revision. this means is that it's possible to connect it directly to the iPad Pro over USB-C, and the USB-C will power it and provide an Ethernet channel so that you can connect to it. And from there, if you use the right script, you can have it assigned a static IP address. It'll resolve, and you can use terminal or a terminal client on your iPad or a VNC client on your iPad to connect up to it. And you also then get access to the USB ports on the Raspberry Pi, the Ethernet port on the Pi, all these sorts of things that you can kind of play around with. So I thought, well, that's something interesting I want to at least play with, because that would mean that if I am traveling and I need to do something that the iPad Pro can't do, I can probably do it in Linux, or I could probably do it through VNC, through a Linux interface. And if I wanted to do any kind of coding or anything like that that I couldn't do on the Pi, I could, or on the iPad, I could do it on the Pi. So right now over here, I actually have both the Raspberry Pis that I own, an original Raspberry Pi and the Pi 4. I'm just kind of get them both up and running with the latest versions of Raspbian, just so I can kind of play around with it. But I had never thought about using a Raspberry Pi as an iPad Pro accessory, so there could be some interesting applications for that.
Should note, this is a new new iPad Pro with the USB-C port.
Yes.
So the older one's like the one I have.
Late 2018 Raspberry Pro, or iPad Pro.
Yeah.
I guess if you put them together, it is a Raspberry Pro.
Yeah, there you go. So what kind of projects are you thinking about?
So at the very least, just having a Linux desktop I can VNC into. If I did want to run particular Linux apps, or have a, you know, now that we have the desktop quality browser in the iPad Pro, it's a little less needed to have it that way. I'm also kind of curious about how I can kind of share internet connection through the iPad to the Raspberry Pi, if I do that wirelessly, or if there's a way to do it hardware-wise. And just more than anything, just kind of a cool little platform to play with. I am going to probably spend some time looking at how, you know, little hacks you can do, mobile hacks with the Raspberry Pi, including, you know, it has a Ethernet cable. So that technically means that if I set it up right, I could have it share the tether a connection from my iPad Pro to the Raspberry Pi, and then tether through wired Ethernet devices. If I'm traveling and need to do something like that, get a wired Ethernet device on the internet. So more and more, I don't know if I have a practical use for this, but it just seemed really cool, theoretically, to do. Cool enough to spend $100 to play around with. So
yeah. Yeah. So I should know the Raspberry Pi itself is like, what, $35? But I assume you're buying a kit, so it has all the power supply and all that stuff.
Yeah, the case and power supply and micro SD with all the, you know, I didn't have a spare micro SD lying around here, but
yeah.
It's and I also bought from a different company. Usually I buy Canna kits.
Yeah.
This I went with Labists, which had a pretty good rating on Amazon, so I figured it was also a good opportunity to kind of keep up with what's going on in the Raspberry Pi ecosystem these days.
Yeah, you know, and I have the original Raspberry Pi. I must be honest, I never did much with it, and I'm getting kind of curious about the 4, because like you said, it has a real web browser, and I think some other things. I think you can do power over Ethernet to it and something like that. Yeah. So, not that I have PoE in my home, but just kind of interesting to think about.
Yeah, I think for geeks like us, just some of the interesting things. I don't know if I have a practical purpose, but it's fun.
That's never been a reason to buy anything, right? Practical purpose.
Exactly. Practical purpose is the second tier of, you know, if it's cool, that's one thing. If it's practical, well, that's just an added bonus.
That's right. That's how I feel about stuff, too. Okay, so I guess I might need to get more interested in that. What version of Linux are you running? I forget what they call the one they use.
Raspbian.
Yeah, Raspbian. So you're using the default?
Which is based off of Debian. So yeah. If you're comfortable admitting Debian, you're comfortable with Raspbian.
Yeah, and Debian's kind of the new de facto standard. I know the containerized version used in Crostini on Chromebooks is also a Debian distro.
Yeah, we've seen, it's kind of interesting to me that we've seen kind of the big three parent distros when you think of CentOS. Well, you know, Fedora versus Debian, you know, Red Hat versus Debian, if you want to go back far. Right. It really is interesting how Debian has been able to take over more and more, whereas Fedora and CentOS and Red Hat are really kind of restricted in their space these days.
Yeah, as well as SUSE Linux and Slackware, and I forget all Slackware Linux and all the ones that I work with.
Yeah, I just haven't seen anything with either of those two distributions in a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, mainstream products that are using them. It seems like Debian became the standard for a lot of hobbyist stuff.
Yeah, and even Ubuntu, right? I mean, Ubuntu is it's there.
Based off Debian, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Oh, something else I bought, which might surprise you. So I had to go help my daughter with some stuff, so I bought a cordless drill. Never owned one. I always had corded drill, but around her place, where I'm going to go help, it's just, it's just like a hassle to plug a extension cord in and drag it all around. So I bought a cordless drill. And here's the surprising thing. So I ordered it from Amazon and got delivered like in a couple of days. Its battery pack, the battery pack for the drill, has a USB-A port. So you can use it as a USB-A charger for, you know, devices. The interesting thing is it shipped here to Hawaii with this, you know, presumably lithium-ion battery pack. I can't order battery packs to Hawaii for delivery here. I mean, I've wanted to order like some Anchors and, you know, other brands and even some computers. Like I think it was an Acer or Asus. I can't remember which now. I think it was an Acer Chromebook I wanted to buy a couple of years ago that wouldn't ship to Hawaii because of the battery. Oh, I can't even order wireless earbuds, you know, the cordless earbuds or whatever you want to call it, you know, like an AirPod knockoff. I can't even order those because they won't ship to Hawaii because of the battery. Cordless power drill? Yep, got it. So there you go.
You reminded me, first of all, that is always very strange. I wonder if they actually know that it's a battery or if it just kind of, oh, well, it's not electronic.
It's a drill.
Yeah, it's a drill.
With a big honking battery pack.
Yeah, and I actually watched a video with the same, you know, talking about that battery pack you know, people were talking about how it could be useful, although it wasn't as useful as a USB device as they were hoping. Because I believe it doesn't have, it might not be that it has quite a lot of pass through. It doesn't charge very quickly.
Oh, okay.
But whatever, it works. But I am curious, you know, you mentioned wireless earbuds, and you picked up a pair of AirPods Pro recently.
I did. Is that how you say it? AirPods plural? Not AirPod Pro? It's AirPods Pro?
Or AirPod, yeah. You're probably right.
Just wondering.
AirPod Pro, AirPods Pro. There's two of them. They're AirPods.
Yeah. So now I'm almost as cool as John, and because I have a pair now. And, you know, I've never had any AirPod or AirPods at all. This is my very first one. So I have, one of the things I found is that my ears are different sized. And so the left ear has a good seal with a large tip in it. No tip is rated as having a good seal in my right ear. So this leads me to believe that a new pejorative that we're going to start hearing is you're a big ear hole.
Possible.
Yeah, yeah. But that said, the experience is pretty good. I have had the right ear AirPod fall out of my ear because it's not a good seal, but I'm really enjoying it. The only thing I wish it had were volume controls right on the AirPod itself. I can control it for my watch, using the crown on my Apple Watch to control volume, but that is only if I'm using the AirPods with my iPhone, which is what is paired my watch. Yeah. If I'm using it with an iPad, the watch doesn't work because that's not what the watch is paired with. So I have to, you know, go to the physical device like an animal to change the volume control.
Yeah, when it is all connected up to the right things, I find that using the crown is kind of comes second nature, you know, as I'm walking around, assuming my hands are both free.
Yeah.
If I'm holding something, it can be a little bit annoying. But what was your thoughts on transparency mode?
It was a little bit surprising, and I think it's not as surprising to people with original AirPod because I think you can kind of hear stuff outside because it's not a sealed environment. But it was, I think it was almost like wearing a hearing aid.
Hmm.
I could actually hear more than I can without my AirPods on. I mean, you know, I can hear the wind blowing and stuff, but it was, I felt like it was actually amplified. How about you?
Yeah, that was sort of my experience with it. And I've actually, since I've used my AirPods a lot when I'm walking around on campus, I keep transparency mode on quite a bit because I have people, you know, come up to me, say things and all that. And I don't want to, you know, not hear them.
Yeah.
But it got to the point where last weekend, or I guess it was Friday night, I was laying in bed and I just wanted to listen to some music. And so I put on the noise cancellation mode.
Uh-huh.
And it sort of shocked me because I've forgotten how much noise cancellation takes out because I got so used to transparency mode adding it in. So it is kind of a fun exploration when you're used to it. But I do like the transparency mode just because, as I described it last time we recorded, it's almost like when you're walking around and you have the volume at maybe a quarter level, it's like you have just background music that you're listening to from some speaker off, you know, 20 feet away.
Right.
And people come up to you and talk to you, and you can still hear them just fine. And you can also listen to your music during a conversation with them. And, you know, if the conversation is extremely interesting, you can enjoy the music at least. So.
One of the other things I noticed is that compared to my other Bluetooth earbuds and headsets, it seems to have a much better, much more distance capability than my other devices. So I can, my Google Assistant thinks I'm talking to it. But anyway, I can be further from the paired device and still get a very good sound quality than, you know, other earbuds I have. So when I'm puttering around outside, you know, cleaning up and things, I just leave iPad Pro or something, you know, stationary, and I walk around it, and the sound quality is still good.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife asked me today how far the range was on the AirPod Pro, and I told her, well, I've never had a problem with it in our apartment, or, you know, I can leave my phone somewhere and go pretty far away from it, and it still works just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, and as I said, for me at least, it's much better than other devices I have, some of which poop out after 6 or 7 feet, really.
Yeah. So I'm glad that you have joined the team.
I'm cool.
Yeah. Well, you were always pretty cool, but now you're, you know, you can ignore people with the rest of us by using your transparency mode and slowly listening. But, you know, you can't get too into it. I did have a student last week who was texting in class, which is much more common than you'd probably think. But she held the phone up kind of right in front of her, so it was very obvious what she was doing. And then she got this look on her face at one point because she had a very surprising text come in. And it was probably something like, we can see that you're texting in class from someone in class.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I looked over at her and I said, oh, that must have been an interesting text. Kind of broke my lecture, said that in the middle of it. And she just looked and went, huh? And I looked back and said, yep, I guess it was. And I kept on lecturing and the whole class lot of enjoyment out of that. So you have to be very careful how you stealthily use technology.
You broke her fourth wall.
I did.
You were just a character in the world, and then you became real by addressing her.
Yes.
All right. Speaking of students, although we haven't been one in a while, you don't have to be a student, but you have to be a student of life, I guess. So IEEE Spectrum quoted, I think, a firm called Indeed, which does a survey of, you know, what tech skills employers are interested in. You know, SQL is number one.
That doesn't surprise me.
Doesn't surprise you?
SQL has been working its way into so many different things where, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if the next major versions of Excel and, you know, spreadsheet software support some sort of SQL to grab live data from data stores or something like that, because that's the only thing that we're really missing to convert Excel into something along the power of Access.
Yeah,
was the ability to kind of have a live data store and be able to suck data in, you know, without having to download a file first or something like that. So I think SQL is just getting much more common than you and I think outside of the world of programming and database programming.
Yeah, and of course, almost all mobile devices use SQLite, so that stands for reason. Number two is Java, which I think has been number one for at least in other surveys. I'm not a Java fan, as other people love it.
You get SQLite and Java, and you have Android apps.
There you go. That's true. That's true. But here's what made me happy. Python has jumped to number three. It is the third most interested tech skill by employers. But what's falling is also interesting. .NET, Oracle, and HTML. Mm-hmm. Now, HTML, I understand, because it's not much of a skill to begin with. But
well, and it's harder and harder to do anything in base HTML anymore.
Yeah.
You know? You just don't see it very often with the frameworks that we have for web development.
Yeah.
.NET sort of makes sense. Oracle sort of makes sense, just because I think Oracle's starting to price themselves out. People are able to do what they would have used an Oracle mainframe for with MariaDB and MySQL a little bit easier these days.
Yeah, true. But anyway, thought it was interesting. But what was also interesting, what's missing, or at least I was found it interesting, Google's Dart and Flutter were nowhere in the list. Let me see. Yeah, they've got 20 skills. And this is not programming languages. These are skills. So .NET's not really a programming language. But, you know, like Scrum is a skill, number 13, that they're interested in. Machine learning is a skill they're interested in. Docker, you know, containers at number 20 is something they're interested in.
You know, what else isn't on this list that's sort of interesting? Swift or Objective-C.
Objective-C, I'm not surprised at. I mean,
Swift, you would think, might show up.
No, I haven't followed macOS development in years. Is Objective-C still the default way to develop for macOS?
I think Swift is now perhaps overtaken it. That's a good question on what's more common in macOS.
Yeah.
I'll just do a quick search for more common macOS language, Swift or C, and see if we get anything on that. Swift is definitely, I think, more friendly than Objective-C. And I think it's now as useful as Objective-C. So, but
I've never tried it.
If you're bored, download Swift and Xcode and just play around with it, because it's actually a very nice language to play with. It's one that I've jumped into a few times, but I keep needing app ideas. That's my problem. Like, you know, I want to build something, but I don't necessarily know what to build yet. So
that's funny. And I was just going to ask if you also tried Swift Playground, which I've also never tried.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's funny you should say that, because I was just thinking about learning Google Dart, because I just think it's an interesting approach to building stuff these days, Dart and Flutter. But the problem is, do I need to build?
You come up with an idea, or I come up with an idea. You build it in Google Dart, I'll build it in Swift, and we'll see, you know, how long it takes for us to, you know, get a cross-platform application going.
That's the reason I'm interested in Dart and Flutter, by the way, because with Flutter, which is sort of the GUI developer side of it, it will build to almost anything. Windows, mm-hmm. macOS, Linux, I assume Windows. Android and iOS. I think it'll even do weird stuff like compile, quote-unquote, JavaScript. Mm-hmm. So, or compile to JavaScript. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe transcribe is a better word. Transcribe to JavaScript. So, anyway, something
it's interesting looking on this list, what had the biggest growth?
Yeah.
And that was AWS and Azure.
Yeah.
And machine learning.
Yeah.
So,
and Python. And
Docker. Look at Docker.
Yeah.
4,000. Yeah. Go from 0.1 to 5.1. Man, Docker is getting more and more interesting, it seems.
It's all about containers.
Containers, you know, from an admin standpoint, you like containers.
It makes so much sense, right?
Store them and you don't have
isolate them.
Yeah, completely isolate them.
Yeah. So. But Scrum, I also found that interesting. So, you know, Scrum is an individual skill, aside from or apart from agile development as a whole. Agile development maybe that's not a skill. That's probably why Scrum is actually a skill. Agile development is sort of a philosophy. But also Unix and SQL Server are on the way down, even though SQL as a programming language is up. So, like you said,
doesn't surprise me because, so, you know, if you talk to computer science students today and you mention anything having to do with machine admin.
Yeah.
Assistant admin. They look at you like you're nuts. You know, because, why are you not using, you know, a web service or a cloud service or a Docker, you know, sort of container? Why are you building off of near bare metal or those sorts of things? So,
like an animal.
Sysadmin is going to, sysadmin is going to be a very strange skill, I think, in the next 20 years to sort of still have.
They look at you like you're a beaver gathering sticks and mud to build All righty. So, I don't think I have anything else to add, but yeah, it was interesting. Also, you know, we were talking about Oracle going down. So Oracle dropped -38% and is now the 11th most desirable skill. SQL Server, Microsoft SQL Server is also is down -17%, is at a 19th, dropping with a bullet or whatever. So pretty interesting.
Well, I think what we're seeing is the web-based... You know, I think we're almost on the verge of going into Web 3.0. You know, if Web 2.0 was moving things to the idea of agile and all that, Web 3.0 is going to be cloud-based everything. And you're really going to keep on-prem the only just data that you need on-prem. But I could see all the processes going web-based where, you know, if your company needs to secure your data buckets live on-prem. But the actual software lives in the cloud.
All righty. And with that note for the future, this brings podcast number, 308 to a close. We will talk to you next time, hopefully without an echo in my ear. Talk to you later, John.